Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, a podcast made for the lefties amongst us. Politically Enraged is a podcast about politics, both British and further afield, and a place to talk about society and how it needs to be improved for everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Political Rages, Instagram at Politically Enraged. You can sponsor the show on Ko-fi, or you can follow my personal socials. I'm Davey Moo, across all social media, and I'm here to talk to real people about real problems and work out how we move forward. Enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome as always to Politically Enraged, a podcast built, designed and created to keep the lefties sane, especially in these trying times. My guest today is Goatmeal from TikTok and Instagram, who is a political commentator that I've really enjoyed watching the videos of. I'm really excited for you guys to see what he's got going on. Please give him a follow. He is extremely knowledgeable and makes me laugh too. So give him a go. And I hope you enjoy today's episode. So, Aidan, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Are you excited to be here?
I'm very excited to be here. This is great, yeah.
Good. Before we get started, I do have to ask, because I have a crazy nickname as well, which is Davey Moo, and that's because I used to open my window and shout, "Fucking Moo!" at the cows when they used to wake me up. please explain the rationale behind your username.
So Goatmeal, it just came from a place of what I don't even know. I was just like joking around with like greatest of all time, and then goat and oatmeal, goatmeal. It's meant to be like a pun, but it just was something like I didn't plan on making TikToks. It just kind of was like, oh, I'll just make my name that. And it just kind of stuck. And then it got to a point where I was like, oh, I can't change it now, because I got like 10K, 11K followers. I should just commit to it. So I've committed to being Goatmeal now.
It's really funny. People keep being like, hey, do you want to come and speak at this event? Do you want to do this, that, and the other? And I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to get on stage. And they're like, angry political commentator, part-time journalist, Davey Moo. And I'm like, fuck's sake.
that's the thing. Like, because your stuff, you're a lot more, you are very lighthearted in comedy, but you're very sort of information-based. Like, this is how you can rebel. And I'm just making stupid jokes with like a theme of politics.
I think so that's...
Like, it's okay.
That's the thing, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that, because like one of the things I've been talking about a lot today, I've just posted a video earlier, and obviously it's being reviewed, as everything I post these days is, but I talked about my origin and about why. So I think it's a bit difficult for me to sort of narrow down when I got obsessed with politics, because I've always cared about it, because as a flagrant homosexual, I've always cared, because I've always like campaigned for marriage equality and stuff like that. And but I got really into it because one of my exes from a very long time ago was extremely political and made me start on the path of literacy, and then obviously Brexit made me be like, tear the system down and destroy it all. But how did you get started in it all?
Well, like that's the thing though, with being part of the LGBT community, your existence is political, so it makes sense to be political. Absolutely. But I kind of got interested in politics. The initial interest came from my mum, who was born in 1960 and was like an out and out punk with like a big pink mohawk, super like fuck you to the system kind of person. So she was like a big influence to me to kind of just pay attention to what's going on. And her big sort of ethos was question everything. Don't believe a thing you're told, especially if it's by an old white guy. So that was kind of the basis for it. But weirdly, it kind of was peaked in like my year 9 history class. When we were studying sort of how Hitler rose to power, and that kind of how he played the political game and tricked normal people into believing in like far right fascist shit. And that kind of pushed me into that boat of like politics and caring about it. And then around the time where UKIP was at its peak, so where I'm from is Medway in Kent, and Rochester became like the second place to vote in a UKIP person. And there was a lot of like BNP marches and stuff like that. And I went to kind of rally against them, and it got a bit physical, a bit shouty. And I was like, this is for me. I want to be here. And that's kind of put me down that road of like being into politics and reading and becoming not just like involved and angry, but like knowing why what's happening is happening.
I think that's the best way to do it, is to actually get immersed in it as well, because there's a lot... And this isn't a critique, by the way, before anyone hears this and thinks that I'm coming at you. Like, there's a lot of people that Champagne Socialist is really funny because his username is Champagne Socialist, but he isn't one. But a Champagne Socialist is someone who's rich enough that they think socialism is a great idea, but it won't ever affect them. And there's a lot of people that, I don't know what the right term is, but they read about politics and they see it as an abstract, and so they get involved. Now, that does include the Tories, because it doesn't really matter what they do. They're rich enough that they're insulated from their own decisions. There's also a lot of people that sit outside of politics but have a passing interest in it. And I think it's those people that we're all, like, as a collective, we're all trying to draw into our orbit and get more immersed and make them realize that politics affects everything. Me and Super Tonsky had a conversation about 6 months ago that I think about almost every day, where I literally said to her the exact words, even the price of milk is political.
Yeah.
Because it's politics that makes it makes it cost, well, it makes it really fucking expensive these days.
Yeah, exactly, so that.
It's exactly like that. It's how you get into it that kind of ferments how you're going to go through it.
Exactly.
And so it's cool to see how many people have kind of gone on this app that's like, that's originally for dancing kids, and now it's like, hi, I'm going to shout at you about politics.
Exactly that. But it's like, every little nook and cranny of society is political. And so, I grew up like on a council estate, super rough family, you know, working class backgrounds properly. And as a kid, I was like, why is no one talking about the fact that what these people are choosing to do is the reason why fucking my parents can't have dinner this night, so I've got to eat instead of them, that kind of thing. And it's that, people don't realize like the nuance of every little decision that they make affects you in your pocket. So yeah, it's great that like this dancing kids app has now just, it's now just full of us angry leftists just being like, why are we allowing this to happen?
I think the biggest irony for me as well is the never-ending cycle of right-wing people saying really controversial things, and then loads of us are like, hi, this is controversial and wrong. And they're like, oh, you can't say anything on the internet. It's like,
I know.
No, you can't. Because when you say something stupid on a platform that's actually filled with a bunch of left-wing people, we're all going to be like, hi, did you know that there's 17 ways that this is wrong?
I know. Literally just being like, oh, here's a fact that disproves you. And they're like, oh, you're such a snowflake. You're so offended by this. It's like, well, it's just a fact that you're incorrect. I'm sorry that you don't like facts, but it's just, you're wrong.
I had a guy today, I did a video yesterday, as I think we've all been talking about the climate, haven't we? And I did a video yesterday about the climate, and he commented, oh, well, I don't think many people are going to die of excess heat. And I was like, they already have, you absolute goose. Like, literally in the newspapers.
It's that mental thing, it's like British exceptionalism as well, of like, and super like, you know, white, middle class focused, like little Englanders, where they're like, don't think about the fact that, yeah, maybe this country of course the environment's affecting us now, but it's the global south, and there's people like that that are going to be massively affected by this. It's going to end up affecting us, but to start with, it's not us that's going to have the problem. And these people can't have the empathy to sort of look just outside their village walls and be like, oh, look, these people are dying, I should feel bad for them.
Honestly, I think one of the funniest things is they should be the ones that are most motivated to stop climate change.
Exactly.
Because they're like, immigrants, and it's like, what do you think is going to happen when countries like in that region of the world are so hot that people can't literally survive there?
Exactly that. They've grown their whole personality around disliking immigrants, and now they're not scared of the thing that's going to put the most amount of immigrants here.
Speaking of people that hate immigrants, let's talk about the leadership race. The perfect segue.
Yeah, it's really just a race to the bottom, isn't it? It's just insane.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you see the comment that I left on your video?
Oh, what was it? I think I did. Well, remind me.
Oh, God. It made me laugh so hard when I wrote it. It's the final cunt down.
Yeah, the final cunt down. That made me laugh as well.
Oh, God. Honestly. I just...
Yeah, it's painful, isn't it? Just especially when the fact that now we're left with fucking Rishi Sunak and I'm fairly surprised Liz Truss got into the final. I thought it was going to be Morden right to the end, but I think that last debate and her sort of flailing support of Boris Johnson out of nowhere and the U-turn she did on trans rights probably affected it a bit as well. I think that's what got her in the end. But Liz Truss being a possible PM is a terrifying thought.
I'm not going to lie to you. When I found out, I was having some tea in town, and I was sat there, and it came up with like Mordaunt eliminated and Truss, and I just pictured I just pictured Liz Truss stood up as it Keir Starmer for PMQs, and
I know.
I was like, please, this is like, I know that
God,
I know
yeah.
if we're gonna go up in flames, let's at least let it be funny. Because like Sunak is, you know, he's quite, he has no media training whatsoever,
none,
and he can't talk to the media. But I guarantee you, he'd not be, I'd probably be quite good at question time. But imagine Liz Truss.
I mean, like Sunak has an element. This is the thing that Boris Johnson had, was it's that element of charisma where they can work to the crowd they've got, you know. And Sunak knows how to do that. But Truss is like, she's just like a child lost at the zoo. I don't understand how she's got to the level she's at in politics. It's truly astounding.
She's sold everything she's ever believed down the river. You know, like
exactly that.
I know people change. I understand that people change. I mean, Christ, the transformation I've gone through in the last like year of being like arguably one of those like center left types that most people hate to being like, destroy everything and start again. Like, but Liz Truss, I remember watching the thing where she was sat on the panel of young Lib Dems going, like in that weird voice she used to have as well, I'm not a monarchist at all. I think we should destroy the monarchy. And now she's like, oh, the Queen's the best thing ever. Park markets.
That's surely going to come back to bite her in the arse as well. Like, I hope that not even conservative voters are stupid enough to fall for the lie that she is the most Brexity Brexiteer that loves the royals, because she's just not. She's just not in her DNA. She's not that. And so I hope they don't fall for it. Sunak, I could see tricking them into believing that he thinks that way. But I can't see her convincing them that she does.
I think, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think you're giving them too much credit because like,
yeah, probably.
Look at what the, you know, I know countless people that are like Daily Mail reading, you know, them nasty foreigners, like it's all the fault of the trans idiots. And they honestly, If the newspaper tomorrow printed Boris Johnson is immortal, they'd all be like, I knew it. I'm telling you. Every time I did a speech, I was like, he's immortal. It's like, that's the kind of like absolute twattery that is normalized at the minute.
It's that. And it's that. Then they'll, within the same process, say, but North Korea is a ridiculous country. That kind of thing could never happen here. And it's like, you're literally the reason why stuff like this happens.
Exactly. It's so much indoctrination. And it's like, in my kind of moments, I've been trying to sort of wrestle with this recently, especially over the last few days. I've been trying to think, what do I feel about those people? Do I think you are beneath contempt and I can't be arsed with you? Or do I feel sorry for them anyway? Because there's a pub in Leeds, which I do walk past quite a lot because I go on a lot of like evening rambles, especially while it's been hot. It's the only way to survive. And it's called the Three Legs. And there's so many people that sitting there who are the, you know, like, I've got the British flag tattooed on my arm. And I just look at them and I think, you must have some level of like awareness, decency somewhere in there. Where is it and what do I do to reach it? Or is it that they don't? And we just have to go, you're a lost cause. Let's just move on and focus on the people we can reach.
It's a difficult line to walk because I have this, like, obviously, I'm sure it's pretty similar, maybe similar for you, but family members who you have these, you butt heads with them all the time in these conversations. And it's like that with mine a little bit. And I look at it in like a class perspective. And I feel like working class people that feel like that have been sold down the river and convinced that the enemy is at the gate rather than already standing next to them, telling them to vote Tory. And then I kind of, as you go up the levels of the class system, my sympathy dissipates because I'm like, if you're a middle-class person and you vote conservative, you're probably quite evil and you don't have much empathy. And there's no point trying to reach you because you're like, well, I got mine. Who cares what happens to everyone else? And then if you're upper class, you know, you're the person in the party. And so I feel like the working class roots, which is the majority, which is the Tory voter base really now, they've convinced these people to vote for them. I have sympathy for them because I think they fell for a lie. And I almost hope that it, like the work we're doing, you know, the little bit that it affects and like the obvious lies that have come out of the number 10 has almost convinced them that they've maybe slightly gone, oh, maybe these people aren't for me. Maybe like I need to vote UKIP again or right wing or whatever, something that will split the right wing vote rather than then thinking, oh, the Tories are for me, you know?
Yeah, this is the thing. So I'm reading this at the minute and for this isn't a video podcast. I've just held up Contemporary British Fascism, second edition by Nigel Copsey. And it's really interesting. I don't know if you saw, but I did a video the other day where I was talking about my worries about what could potentially, I don't think it will happen now necessarily based on who the leadership contenders are now, But my worry is that we're going to have a repeat of what happened in the 60s, which was Thatcher was put in and she was seen as a moderate Tory.
Mm-hmm.
And that displaced a lot of the further right people that were in the party. And right now we have a huge base of people in the Tory party who joined it because they wanted to push through the extremist agenda of Brexit. And it is an extremist agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, my curiosity is, will those people remain in the party because there aren't other parties that represent them now? Or will they split off and we'll see another rise of the BNP, the National Front, like a new organisation? And if that happens, because it's obviously an if, but if it happens, is that the right thing to happen? Do they need their own party that they can just fuck off to and sit in the corner going, meow, meow?
I completely agree. And I think it's, because you in that sort of noughties to early 2010s, that was the thing. I mean, obviously UKIP bubbled up to being more of a problem than anyone suspected. But like that I remember there being the EDL trying to become a proper political party and the BNPs and the UKIPs and all that. And I think that far right sort of fascist minded racist group will always be there on the right of politics. And, you know, the Tories can choose to envelop that and try and gain their voter basis, which is what the Tories did with Brexit and everything like that, which is why they're in the shit show they're in now. Or they can try and be traditional conservatives and say, well, we're center right, we believe in economic stability and stuff like this, which fascism can't provide you, and say, you know what, we're not going to deal with these nut jobs and we're just going to leave them in the corner. And I think there has to be a political home for them. Otherwise, they're just going to go, well, I'll vote for whatever gets me closer to what I want, which is the Tories. So you need to kind of give them, it's like, you know, when you've got like a shitty kid and you just need to give them some Lego to play with so they're distracted, so they stop terrorizing the other kids. That's basically what we need to do with them.
Essentially, yeah. The more I thought about it, the more I was like, if they did split off and form their own political party, then good. It would lessen the support for the Tories, mm-hmm. and it would mean that they do have their own sort of little fucking playground to go and do whatever in. My only worry is that there would be the radicalization that comes with them having their own group and echo chamber, but it would still be a smaller subsection of the mainstream right. So I think that's what we need to hope for. It was almost... I mean, let's talk about it. Like, when I saw that thing that Britain First had endorsed Kemi Badenoch, I was like, if you were a decent human being and Britain First was like, vote for this person, would you not be like, I'm going to drop out of the race because it looks like all of the worst elements of humanity think that I'm good?
Yeah, that would tell me to be like, oh, maybe I'm kind of in the wrong group here. I would, you would think it would give them some kind of idea that they're like going down the wrong road. But I think it is terrifying that these groups are there and can be so loud. But I think when they have their own space, you'll be able to see just how few people there are. Like when it was UKIP, when it was BNP, they were almost laughable at how few people really believed in them. And even conservatives would be like, oh, you're a nut job if you believe in that stuff, because it's such a minute group. But now that they've been enveloped into the wider conservative net, you have this thing where you think, well, every conservative is this right-wing nut job crazy case, which I'm sure maybe it's the case, but I want to say it's not the case. But unfortunately, by enveloping that subsection, they've painted them all with the same brush, and now every conservative is a far-right nut job in everyone else's eyes.
I think that's... It's a... What's it called? It was a reciprocal effect, because what happened was they had to go further right to attract the Brexit...
Mm-hmm.
The full story of it is the Daily Mail. I've talked about this loads recently. I think people must think I only know one fact. But in November 2019, the Daily Mail ran a front page headline which said "Stand Down Nigel," which was encouraging Nigel Farage's Brexit party to stand down a lot of his MPs. And so they stood 317 of their MPs down in key constituencies so that the people that would have voted Brexit party voted Conservative to get that through. And when you make that decision, what... If you accept that decision, which the Conservatives obviously did because they had no problem with it and it was endorsed by the right-wing press, not only is it that those radicals are coming to you, but you have to accept those radicals' views.
Precisely.
And so there was, at the same time as they became one with the Conservative Party became radical by accepting them. And so the start of this leadership contest was really frightening. As like, just obviously, I like the big problem at the minute is like transgender people are a massive threat. But even as an LGBT plus person, just watching just person after person just being like, we're going to make LGBT plus people's lives miserable. I was like, fuck me, what is happening right now?
Yeah, And what the terrifying thing about that as well was also the fact that you're going, is this going to win them votes? Is there this many people out there that are that transphobic? I mean, I know the transphobes exist, but even that homophobic, you'd think that we'd have some development, at least in the last 20 years, where they'd go, I'm not going to vote for someone just on the basis that they don't like gay people. But it seems to be that they were talking to some kind of voter base, which is rather terrifying that that seems to be a big enough group that it was worth making your whole campaign about that subject.
Well, the issue is, I won't get too long-winded into it because it'll take forever, but the groomer discourse in America has started to travel over here. And what's happened is, it would, like, a lot of people say that it's the fault of the whole community for standing with trans people, that everyone's now angry at the whole community because we stand with trans people and trans people bad. But the fact is that hatred and dislike hasn't just manifested from nowhere. These people have always had a problem with us.
Yep.
And our protection of transgender people has legitimized this hatred that they haven't been, they haven't felt safe to put out there. And it's why I love, like, saying stuff like, make homophobes afraid again, make transphobes afraid again. Like, exactly. I'm stealing your shit, Donald Trump, because, like, it, you know, you're a prick, but you had good slogans.
That's what the right do well. One thing they do well is slogans.
Yeah, three-word slogans that make
it just seems to make, it seems to make people go nuts for him. I don't understand it, but it seems to work. But it's like, that's the whole thing, though. And that's why how the Tories and right people act towards women isn't surprising, because obviously homophobia and transphobia, it's all wrapped up in misogyny and all these people. It's all a dislike of femininity and how women act and how women are. And that's why sometimes it's not surprising when you feel another Tory is a sexual assaulter or is a criminal of some kind. And that's the truly disgusting part of the whole thing, is it's just wrapped up in a real hatred for women.
I think as well, when it comes to the whole, like, sexual perversion thing, what's really frightening is how rife it is. And this, it does, I have to say, being completely fair, it goes much further than the Tory party.
Oh yeah.
There's been history of some awful things happening in Parliament and being condoned and covered up by the people that were seeing you there. And I think when you start to realize that that's the level of corruption that runs through Westminster, that's why in particular, this isn't, you know, like voting Labour or a coalition in is step one of a huge bunch of things that we need to push for. Definitely. Because allowing that kind of shit to continue to run through our politics is frightening.
It's also just massively out of date. Like, and the whole reason that Scottish independence is on the precipice that it's on is because of outdated Westminster tactics. It's the reason the North doesn't feel related to the South, because Westminster is so centralised to London that it's just rotten to the core. Like, and because all the power goes through there, people think they can do what they want, and it leads to these things happening. And so even to decentralize out of Westminster, out of London, out of this old crappy system is what we need to do. And that's why the first step, like you said, is voting in Labour or a coalition on the left and pushing for proportional representation and kind of gradually changing the shape of politics so it's not stacked against us.
Actually, I've got a really good book that I'm so behind on everything I'm reading. Like, you should see my coffee table. It's just it's literally piled high with books. But once I've finished that one, I want to read a book called Fortress London by Sam Bright, who writes for Byline. Mm-hmm. And it's all about decentralizing power from London. And I've talked about it loads recently, because the more I actually spoke to Sam about it, and it was really awesome to sit there and have a chat with him about it and say, how do we do that? How do we decentralize power from London? And he was like, this is what you have to do, and this is how we have to do it. And I was like, sweet. So I know that it is possible to do now.
Yeah. And that's the thing as well. It's been the fear of, like, the left, and I guess of the right as well, to a point of, like, well, how do you even get to that stage where you're sort of dismantling capitalism to a degree and moving into a more socialist direction? How do you get to that stage? And it's like, people say it like, oh, we're just going to become communist, we're just going to become socialist, like it's a buzzword. But it's like, there are genuine steps we can make and need to make to keep our society around in any kind of positive way to get there. And I think it's interesting now that, like, people's eyes are opening to the possibility of even proportional representation was a ludicrous dream a few years ago, and now it's like a real point of contention that Labour want to implement. And so it's nice to see that progression of people going, yeah, this is something we can actually do.
That's the thing. I think there's some stuff going on behind the scenes I can't really go into, even though it's driving me insane that I'm sworn to secrecy, but, like, proportional representation and getting rid of FPTP and voter reform in general is something that, like, I'm massively involved in at the minute.
Mm.
And it's so important that we start talking about it as a whole, because it's after all of us for so long standing there going, this is ridiculous, democracy screwed, what can we do? How do we fight? How do we do this? This is the way that we, this is how we reach the people mm-hmm. that are so disaffected and say, are you fed up? Are you pissed off? This is the thing that you can do to change. Lobby for this. And one thing that does bother me is that a lot of people are very like, and I understand why as well. A lot of people are like, oh, elect Labour or elect a coalition. Well, they're not going to implement the policies I want. And I'm like, it's step one, hun. It's not the end.
Yeah.
That's the start. It's the first shuffling footstep towards what we want.
Precisely that. That's kind of how I feel. And that's the problem I think Starmer has to deal with now, is like people going, oh, well, he's just a Tory in a red tie. He's very centrist. He's a Blairite, all this stuff. And like, yeah, that's all true. But this is the first step we need to take to get anywhere in the right direction. I mean, if it wasn't for the world's recession, who knows where this country would be with a Labour government maybe still in power. But because of that, it killed the Labour government off. And so now this is a chance to get that going again, with Labour having even more of an opportunity to look good compared to what the Tories are. And so I think, yeah, people need to kind of almost swallow the hard pill and think this is the step we have to take. Just get him in office and stop and block out the Tories, change the political system so that voting is actually representative, because like you know this, that most people do vote left wing. It's just because of the way the system is there, it ends up being conservative. And it's a thing of like, just for now, just take the hard pill, vote Labour, get Starmer in, and then we can have a real discussion about what's the next step.
Exactly. I'm just going to say it for 1 second. Sorry, I don't know why it's doing it. It's saying that we've got 6 minutes left, and I'm like,
no worries.
It never normally does this in Zoom, so I don't know why it suddenly decided to do it. But yeah, if it crashes, I'll just send you another link on Instagram.
All good. Sounds good.
Cool. The reason that that whole mindset that people have fucks me off so much is that it's so like, because don't get me wrong, like I said, people will disagree. People always disagree. And they're like, you're not a far leftist and whatever. And I'm like, I live in here, hon. I know what I am. But I get that people want this like massive radical change, but people don't think in real terms about what that would involve. It would involve a complete meltdown of the society that we have. We're already on the precipice of it. Look at the NHS ready to crumble. If the NHS goes and we're still seeing 2.5 million COVID infections a week, and all, and 6.6 million people backlogged for treatment. There's your societal collapse, hun. So you'll get what you want, but it'll be at the cost of, I'm assuming some of those people might be long COVID patients, but let's say like 10 million people that won't get health treatment. They'll be out of the workforce and they won't be able to contribute to society. They won't be able to pay taxes. And it's like, we need to avoid that. We need to work slowly towards where we want to be, which is our like lovely socialist utopia. But we can't, everyone wants to jump there instead of putting in the actual framework to make it last.
Yeah, exactly that. And so I've been trying to learn more about like the Soviet Union and how it came to be and why it fell apart. And so there's this book I've been reading that I've got right here. I can't remember what it's exactly called, but it's like, it's basically like, I will grab it so I know the title. It's called, pick it up, this book. It's called The Shortest History of the Soviet Union. So I'm reading that. It's by Sheila Fitzpatrick. I recommend it because it goes through sort of a play-by-play of how they got into power and the mistakes they made and why it didn't work out. And it's kind of this thing of, it was a big societal collapse, a big revolution. And then it was like, well, now what? And so they just were implementing stuff wherever they could implement it. And ultimately, it was built on shoddy foundations, and which is why it never stood up to the test of time. And so that is ultimately what we need to avoid happening again. So if you have a complete societal collapse, we say, well, let's just let the Tories run into the ground and we can rebuild it into communism or socialism or whatever we want it to be on the left wing. It's like you're just creating different problems to solve. So like you said, it's a gradual progressive change where you're bringing people along with you who otherwise might be left out as well, because that's an important aspect of like people saying Starmer's trying to get Tories to vote for him. It's like, well, yeah, how else do you think he's going to win? That has
voters don't just magically appear.
Like. Yeah, it's like you need to get the people that didn't vote Labour to vote Labour. That's the whole thing of even no matter what system you have, that's what has to happen.
They don't seem to see that that's what the Tories did in reverse. No. Like a shitload of Tories were like, well, Brexit's a big fucking pile of shit, but I've got to stand behind it. Otherwise, people won't vote for us. Like, It's how it works. The only thing that does bother me is there's some things that Starmer has committed to that piss me off. I don't like his stance on Brexit, but I also didn't like Jeremy Corbyn's stance on Brexit. And I was really open about that. And I catch smoke every fucking time I open my mouth about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally, I remember watching late 2018, I think it was. He was on a TV show and the person was like, so what, you know, what's your thoughts about Brexit? What are you going to do about it? And he was like, oh, well, you know, it's really about sort of taking the measure of you know, what people think. And I'm like, give me a stance. Like, you're going to get my vote. You're going to get my vote no matter what. But give me your stance, you know?
It's one of those things that killed him off, I think, as well, which is not having a... On either side of the fence, just pick something to stand on. Because what you can't do is just be in the middle and say, well, we'll see what happens. Maybe, maybe, maybe. No, just say something. Have a point to stand on, please.
Yeah.
But it's that thing with... I can see... I think the thing is, I don't agree with Starmer on Brexit. I think we need to have another vote on it and repeal it and get out of this shit we've got ourselves into. But I can understand he's playing the political game of, well, he can't come out right and be anti-Brexit and say we're going to reform it and rejoin, because then how will he ever convince the Tory voters that are pro-Brexit to join Labour? He has to be seen to be, like, willing to give it a try. But it's to hold that against as the one thing to, like, not vote for him on just feels a bit, it just feels like, well, there's more at play than just, like, he supports Brexit, isn't there?
That's the thing. And, like, I'm not afraid of being critical of Labour or Starmer himself on Twitter, but I also, like, I understand where I come from with it. The problem that I get is there is a lot of tribalism around it and him that frustrates me, but I also get it. Like, I'm going to have my say, and if I think Brexit's bullshit and Labour say that they're going to try and make Brexit work, I'm going to say, hey, Labour, Brexit's a piece of shit. It doesn't mean I'm not going to vote for Labour. It means that I'm saying, hey, you're going to get my vote. And just so you're aware, one of my things that I really care about is the fact that Brexit's a pile of shit.
Exactly.
It's like the whole idea that you have to wholeheartedly stand behind, like, a political party and agree with every single thing that they say and love everyone, like, love every member, is absolute fucking twaddle.
Yeah. It's the Americanization of our politics as well, isn't it? Just being like, it's like there's these celebrity superstars and you have to either back them or you don't back them. And that's how Trump got to be his way, because he's like a cult leader and everyone has to support them. And I've even had people comment on my videos and say to me, be like, well, what are you going to do when the Tories, like, eventually come out of office? Are you just going to stop making videos? Because, like, all you ever do is complain about Tories. I'm like, I will complain about Labour when it's time to complain about Labour. But right now, the focus is on what these assholes are up to.
That's the thing. It's like, what does me complaining about Labour achieve? It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. I can whinge about them all I want.
Yeah.
It doesn't change a single thing. So when it comes down to what am I going to make content about, obviously it's going to be the dickheads in charge, because complaining about them and saying this is what they do when they're in charge, that makes a difference, because someone might see it and be like, God, I was going to vote for him, but if that's what they're doing, I'm not fucking doing that.
Precisely that. Precisely that. And it's also like, when it comes to criticizing Labour, like, I want people to be aware that, like, you know, this party, maybe you don't love them that much, and here's the reason to support them, but let me give you a full, well-rounded view so it's not just completely one-sided.
Exactly. So what's, like, because you talked about the shortest history of the Soviet Union and stuff. I've been speaking to a lot of people with a lot of mixed views about socialism, etc. The funniest thing for me is that people think that socialism and communism are two completely distinct things, when one of them is the system of governance and one of them is a set of ideals and how you implement them. But I hear a lot of people be like, well, socialism is bad because other places have been socialist and they're, like, totalitarian. And I'm like, right, there's bad ways to do stuff and good ways to do stuff. Yeah. And if a country uses totalitarianism to implement a socialist system, that's bad.
Yeah,
but there is ways to democratically do it, and that's what we want. It's so weird to have to explain to people stuff like that, because you would think a lot of people that say it are really politically literate, and I'm like, obviously I don't want there to be a totalitarian regime in charge where we're not allowed to vote.
It's exactly that. It's because I think it's come from a place of, like, the Red Scare in the American, like, the 50s and 60s, of just people being told that this is what this is and it's nothing different. And every time, you know, in South America, when a country votes it and the FBI kills someone off, they go, this is what happens with the communism. And it's just become synonymous with, you know, authoritarianism, totalitarianism, and just negativity. But it's like, there are positive examples of socialism and communism in places like Vietnam, where it's kind of, it seems to be working for them. And even the idea of, like, you know, the Scandinavian countries, it's like, those are essentially socialist countries, which is why they do so well. And it's weird that, like, the capitalists be like, oh, look how well Norway's doing. Now they're having a great time. It's like, that's a socialist country. That's why they're doing well. How can we compliment them, but also criticize the reason why they're doing it? And it is frustrating when people kind of just have this one window of view of what it is. But I think it's then our jobs to kind of educate them and be like, well, you know, give it a chance, read a little bit more, take in the news a bit more, and really analyze why you're being told what you're being told. Like, does it benefit the capitalists that you think communism and socialism is bad? Yes. Well, then wonder why they're the ones telling you that it's bad.
I think the funniest thing is to, there's a certain sort of group of people that say socialism bad. And then you say to them, define socialism. And they just go silent. I literally had it the other day. I knew it was going to happen. Someone on Twitter was, I said something about, oh, it was, we've just been talking about Suella Braverman. I said something bad about her because she's just an awful human being. Evil. And someone said something like, wait till she wins, like MAGA, hashtag MAGA or something. And I was like, what are you even talking about? Just like, it's completely pointless to speak to people like you.
Yeah.
And he said like a true communist. And I said, define communism. And he blocked me. And I'm like, don't use words you don't understand.
Do you think it's because it's like, it's the commodification of like, of political entity? So like, you've got these right wingers who, everything is a slogan, everything, they just say it because they're like, I'm going to trigger some wokey snowflakes. I'm just going to say it. And it, because it means nothing to them. Brexit, when you ask them to say, what is Brexit? They go, whatever I wanted to be on the day that it is, because I don't, it doesn't have a meaning. So to them, these ideas, these political things are just like things they can say to piss off the people they don't like, with the people with the dyed hair and the piercings that they think are crazy. Whereas for us, people who maybe are on the left side, who think, oh, I actually have political ideas and I'd like, the reason I'm left wing and liberal and snowflakey, wokey, is because I want to see the world be slightly better for people. So I have done the reading. I know the stuff. Everything I say has a reason and a historical explanation. These people can't get their head around that concept of what they say, what they actually think, rather than just repeating whatever they can to offend someone. You know, I think that's kind of the difference.
Potentially, yeah. I think that a lot of it is, there is a level of indoctrination to it all, because it's like, you, if you, you know, you mentioned like slogans and stuff like that. I've tried really, really hard to have fruitful conversations with Brexiteers that have just ended up with me being absolutely exasperated. Because I remember I was really small account, and I did a video where I was like, I don't understand people that voted Brexit. You guys have been betrayed. Like, you guys have been betrayed. I haven't been betrayed. I voted against it. And so I was against the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
But you guys voted for this like imaginary unicorns and rainbows Brexit, and you've been absolutely shafted. So why aren't you pissed off? And this guy was like so aggressive and angry, and was like, you're talking shit. So I was like, okay, well, what good has come out of Brexit? He was like, we got our sovereignty back. And I was like, what does sovereignty mean? And he was like, it's we can make our own laws. I was when were we unable to make our own laws? When we were in the EU? Because like, here's a law that got passed 7 months ago, here's a law that got passed 10 years ago. And he was like, he basically repeated that tweet that's really famous, that was like, I don't care if our economy flatlines, and I don't care if we go into recession. I wanted to be out, and we're out. Yeah. And I'm like, right, but for why? Like, what was your goal? What was your aim? If it was just to come out of the EU, well done. You've got what you want. Did you not? That. You wanted nothing more? You just wanted to be out of the EU? And if so, why?
They were just sold a lie, and now they're gripping onto it with everything they've got. Is ultimately it, isn't it? But then you can spread that out to the whole of conservatism. And I always look back at this, and I said, I don't remember who said this to me, but I was like, it was, the idea is like, when have conservatives ever been right about anything long term? Like, they were against every kind of progressive move we've ever made, which we would never dream of going back on. They were against healthcare. They were against gay rights. They were against women getting the vote, women getting to work. They were wrong every time. And now you think, oh, now conservatives are correct. Now, you know, the modern arguments of Brexit stuff are correct. Why? For why do you believe this? And the whole argument of conservatism then begins to fall away, because it's like, they don't know why they want it. They're just angry at the world.
That's the problem, though, as well, that this essence of like, we don't want change because you like you fucking life things change.
Yeah, get used to it.
The biggest thing for me at the minute, and I'm banging on about this a lot because of the weather, but it's something that's bothered me for a long time, is global warming. Mm. This isn't supposition and conjecture. Global warming exists and it's happening.
Yeah.
And number one, it doesn't help that we have absolute fucking geese like Julia Hartley Brewer going, I know more than like meteorologists on the radio. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't fucking have to be polite to a waiter, you creep. Literally. But then the biggest problem of it is, if you want to be loud and wrong, be loud and wrong over there. But we give these huge platforms to people like Julia Hartley Brewer who are going, oh, global warming. It's a couple of days of hot weather. And I'm like, it's an indicator that we are reaching a precipice from which we can never recover. Mm-hmm. And 70 years down the line, like not my ancestors, I'm never going to have kids, but like my, you know, like my great nephews and nieces, whatever, like they're going to be suffering the repercussions. So like the main thing is like, look at it in terms of COVID, right?
Yeah.
If wearing a mask, if I was wrong about wearing a mask, the worst thing I was guilty of was looking like a twat in public.
Yeah.
If you're wrong about wearing a mask, people fucking die.
Yeah, exactly that. That's the difference, isn't it? It's that if you, yeah, you're picking the sides of going like, well, you know, if you take it to the idea of giving gay people the right to get married, you know, or the right to access healthcare, or trans people to get access to whatever they need to feel comfortable. You're saying, on one hand, people get to live in a bit more of an equal society, a bit happier. And on the other, the suicide rate goes up. Mental health takes a toll. It's worse for the NHS. It's worse for us socially. It's like, why are you so against just opening up your angle a little bit and thinking, oh, maybe it's not too bad. It will be better in the long run.
The thing, I always end up talking about trans stuff, but I try and be really cautious because I never want to step on trans people's toes. But it's almost fascinating from an outside perspective. And like, I don't know how much you agree with this, but it's like, I've been actively involved in defending transgender people from the start of the trans panic, which is about 5 years ago now, because I have trans mates who, like, and I said this to someone else earlier, like, bless them, love my trans mates. They're like ordinary to the point of like all like on the cusp of boring, you know. One of them collects rare stamps.
Sure.
Like one of them is learning Korean and like is fucking really annoyingly good at it. They're just not completely ordinary normal people who happen precisely. To be trans. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you look at how long we've been having debates about toilets at this point, and it's like, where's the evidence for these problems?
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's been a huge increase in people identifying as trans. Cool. Has the number of trans people doing bad things gone up? No. Is there like three people that I can name right now that are trans that have done bad things? Yeah. They're the same three people from 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly that. There's just nothing to back up the anti-trans thing other than these people are just don't like the idea of it, or they are some level of you know, one of the isms, you know, there's just something's there, you know, that they don't like it. And it's, I completely agree. I've got so many trans friends and people that I'm close with that I just don't understand. Like, who gives a shit? Who cares if you have to use a pronoun that you maybe didn't think you'd have to use, or you have to just, you know, make sure that wherever the environment is slightly more comfortable for them. Like why are you so upset? Like these people exist. I just never got it.
I think I do, like, I understand the sort of the stone at the center of it, which is you don't like being told that your brain's wrong.
Yeah.
But like, genuinely, this happens a lot. I'm not even being hyperbolic here. I walk loads. I walk all the time. And I live just on the outskirts of Leeds City Centre. So I end up walking through Leeds City Centre quite a lot. And the amount of times I'll be walking and I'll be like, don't know if that's a man or a woman. Anyway, because who gives a fuck?
Yeah, precisely that. Exactly that. Well, who gives a shit what someone's up to? I've got no care in the world what you do with your body, with your time, in the comfort of your own home. Who gives a shit? And that's the crazy thing about these like libertarian conservatives and ultra freedomites and all this shit. It's like, if you really believed in personal freedom and personal choice, you should be pro trans people, because it's up to them what they fucking do with their body.
I think I've kind of hit on, like, it's really complicated to explain, I've tried to make a video about it, and it's so hard to sum up even in 3 minutes, but I've kind of come to the core of the understanding of the problem. And if it was easy to explain, I think it would sort out a lot of things. But essentially, like, I assume, like, you identify as a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so do I. I assume that my idea of what a man is and your idea might diverge in some places.
Mm-hmm.
Who's wrong?
Well, that's no one, technically, is it?
Exactly. Like, my definition of what a man is and your definition of what a man is don't have to align for us both to be correct in what a man is.
Exactly.
And that's the point. What is a woman? Who gives a fuck? If your definition and my definition don't line up, neither of us are wrong. It's just in my existence, in my lived experience, in my universe, in my head, I know what a woman is to me. You know what a woman is to you. Exactly. Let's stop trying to force our ideas into each other's heads and just fucking live and let live.
Precisely that. And it's this thing of like arguing over definitions of words, which is such a wishy-washy subject anyway. So like, it's like, oh, if you try to define the word fun, that could mean anything to anyone, you know? It's like, it's such a weird point of contention that they've got to, where they say, well, define a woman then. It's like, do you know how impossible that is to do for us to all agree on them, what that is? So yeah, I completely agree. That is very much at the center of it, is being like, people don't want to be told that their thoughts of what something is, it's potentially wrong, but also they're trying to force a definition on something that is undefinable.
I think, and like, when I say this, I don't want to be rude, and I'm certainly not trying to actively provoke people that might catch this show that are conservative voters or whatever, but I think one of the problems is conservatism at its root, and a lot of right-wing thinking is make it simple.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. Life ain't simple, hon. And if you can't deal with the fact that sometimes things get complicated and you have to do a bit of thought, research, understanding, then you're probably not cut out to contribute to a society that's built on like living in a building that's made out of tiny materials mixed together to create a rock solid foundation with metal all in that like could like conduct heat and stuff like that. Like,
it's that thing. And that's why the three word slogans do so well and stuff like that, because it's simple. They want the world to be what it was back in my old day or whatever, where everything was easy. No, you were just a kid and you didn't understand what was going on around you. It's never been easy. Society and the world to operate, it's very complex. And so to think that things can be broken down into a micro thing of like, well, this rate of crime happens because of this. And, oh, we don't legalize drugs because drugs kill you. Stuff like this, it's like it's a far too simplistic approach to fixing issues, which is why issues don't get fixed. They just get worse and worse and worse.
That's what I mean when I said about, you know, one of the things that the groups that I'm in are really keen on is enabling Labour to be more radical with policy by trying to make it assert that they will win or get a coalition in the next election, because radical policy change is what we need. And you just touched on it there. Like, the legalization of drugs is so important. Yeah. It was, I always forget which country it is. I think, is it Switzerland or one of those countries in that region? They've eliminated homelessness because of the way that they've gone about dealing with it. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately, they went about dealing with it. Yeah.
It's effectively completely eradicated. There's another country that completely legalized drugs and said, do them. But instead of focusing on punitive measurements for people that did drugs, they focused on rehabilitation. And the rates of drug usage have absolutely fucking plummeted, because if you get the help you need to stop, you don't do it again.
Precisely that. But I can't remember what country it was again. It was one of the Scandi countries. But they literally gave homeless people a house. They gave a homeless person a house. And
that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Cheaper for the taxpayers in the end. Just give them a house and you end up saving money, because it doesn't pull on all of the other things that they need to spend to keep the homeless person homeless. And it's like that thing of radical policy of like approaching things more logically and thinking, well, if we stop it at the source rather than at the end, it's going to fix the whole problem.
There's the one of the things that I'd so wish that it was more well known, that when it comes to the welfare state, of course there are like benefit scroungers, etc., etc., but if we actually fix the tax loopholes that exist so that super rich people can avoid paying tax, We would save more money in doing that than we would ever by prosecuting every single person that takes advantage of the benefits system. Well,
exactly that. I've always thought that. And I grew up, my family luckily was able to avoid ever being on benefits in that way. My parents were married and we were two earners. It was no money, but it was enough to just scrape by. But I grew up around benefit earners and stuff. And I'm like, would I rather fucking Kathy from next door is able to buy a pack of fags with her benefits, or the billionaire in a private jet who flies everywhere killing the planet avoids paying millions in tax? Who am I more angry at here? It's so weird to place the blame on these people who are so few in numbers that like maybe take a bit more than they should on the benefits, or they maybe spend it on what people deem the things that they shouldn't be spending it on. I did that in air quotes, by the way, for anyone listening. It's insane to put the blame on these people.
That's the thing, though. I think a lot of the way that we have to go about untangling where we are in the world now is about going against the very obvious knee-jerk reaction. There was another thing that I wanted to cover, but it's like using the benefit system. If, say, there's 100 people and they each get £100, that's £1,000.
Yeah.
But if there's one person who is super rich and they're avoiding paying their tax, they could potentially be avoiding paying £50,000.
Exactly.
So how much are you actually down by? But the other thing was, one thing that I would love to see in my lifetime is a UBI. Because it would free up so many people to do things like educate. I know that if we had UBI in this country right now, I would be putting that money every month into a savings account that would go towards me doing a master's.
Exactly.
And then I would be able to contribute more because I would be able to get a higher paying job, and then I would pay more into the system. Like that's literally how it works. Or exactly. I had someone the other day being like, UBI is bullshit because then rich people get £300 a month as well as poor people. And I'm like, right, there's 173 billionaires in the UK, and each of them get £300 a month, but so do 10.6 million people in poverty. Who cares if someone that's got incomprehensible wealth gets £300 a month, as long as all of the poor people do? Who cares?
Exactly that. It's the same thing. And that you can twist it to the opposite as well, where like, oh, if you cut people's benefits, who say they're on £500 a month, you cut that by 20 quid. That's an extra like week's worth of food they can't afford, a bill they can't pay. You make a someone who's earning hundreds of millions a year pay an extra 50 grand in tax. They don't care. They still got 80 million left in the bank. It's the exact same approach to it of like, who cares if the rich person gets 300 quid or gets 50 grand taken away from them? Either way, they'll be okay. They can still afford their mansion, their holidays, their private jets and all this stuff. But at the other end of the scale, which is much more, it's a huge, much bigger number of people, what you do with their money has much more impact. So giving them the fix for 300 benefits them massively. And it's just insane that people can't seem to grasp that concept.
I think a lot of people are just programmed to assume that this is how it has to be. And I think that's the weirdest thing. I interviewed this, like one of my best mates in the world. Her name's Maria Norris. Recently I interviewed her for an article that I'm writing. And she said something that like, I genuinely think I need to have it tattooed on me because I love it so much. Because she said, we need a revolution in our heads before we have a revolution in the streets. And it's so true that we need to start thinking in terms of how things could be before we start trying to make them that way. And until we do that, we're never going to succeed.
Yeah. And that's what but that's why I think we're seeing, especially in Gen Z, which I sort of count myself as part of, but I'm not quite, I'm a bit too old for it. But we're seeing that come out where like generation after generation, people are swinging more left wing and staying left wing. Not this old bullshit of you become more conservative as you get older. Like, you know, you've got 35-year-old like millennials who are still as left wing as ever because of, you know, your Rage Against the Machine, your System of a Downs, those kind of influence. But now because of TikTok and people like us, you're seeing these conversations happening at a much earlier age and people staying in that way of thinking. And so we are gradually changing people's thought processes and how people are thinking is much more collective rather than individual, because obviously capitalism breeds individualism, whereas socialism breeds collectivism. So it's kind of going that way, which I feel positive for the future, but you have to hope that we don't kill ourselves before we get there.
Exactly. Do you know what? It's really funny that you mentioned like System of a Down and things like that. Because that was the music that I fed myself on during uni.
Oh, me too.
And it's definitely, like, it has impacted. And I was thinking to myself the other day, I was like, oh, we really need more political music. We really need more music like that to inspire people. And we do. I definitely think that we do. But at the same time, I, as trite as it might sound, I think that's what we are. I think we're the new generation of like anarchist, anti-capitalist music that, that makes us think about the way that the system is and that it can be better.
Yeah. I think it's that, yeah, because music was the most accessible thing in the era of, you know, the Rage Against the Machines and stuff. And now, you know, music is obviously still really accessible, but TikTok is even more so, you know, because you've got people who you can relate to talking straight to you down the camera, being like, here's the shit that's going on and here's what we can do to fix it. And I think you're right. Maybe there is an element of that, of like the newer, younger voices are of people who are on TikTok that are talking about this stuff.
I think that's one of the, like, it happens quite a lot where I always get overwhelmed with this fear that people will think that I'm disingenuous, but I talked about it recently. I was just like, look, I'm done with worrying about that anymore. If people think I'm disingenuous, then they're going to think I'm disingenuous no matter what.
Yeah.
But it's so funny for me to have like come from growing up in like, we certainly weren't in like poverty as in we couldn't afford food and things like that, but we were poor as fuck when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And like, I've gotten to where I am because I'm very lucky. Like, I've met a lot of people that have given me a chance. I've met a lot of people that have like borne with me whilst I've had like mental breakdowns and things like that. You know, I'm really lucky to be where I am, where I'm like, I won't say affluent, but comfortable and stuff like that. And so I always know what it's like to come from that and be where I am. And I know that it's luck. And one thing that we really need to impart on people is survivorship bias, because a lot of people just don't even realize it's a thing. No. But for every, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a successful streamer, for every PewDiePie, there's about 10,000 people behind him with 176 subscribers who can't afford, who are also doing the jobs that we do. And it's like, of course there's people that can break out of the system and can move up the classes and make millions and blah, blah, blah. But think how many countless people sit behind them that don't do that.
Exactly that. I mean, you get a weird survivor's guilt for it, because I feel like I had a very similar sort of upbringing where homelessness wasn't like at the door, but there was days that you'd avoid the lone man coming around to collect the bills and stuff like that, you know? And I worked out of it, and I got myself to uni and all of this stuff, and I had a lot of help and luck along the way, which got me to where I'm at. But I can look back and look at home, and I could see all the people who I was contemporaries with who didn't, and because no fault of their own, just the systems played against them, and I managed to get very lucky to get through it. And it's that, and people, the frustrating thing is you get people that then come from a similar background and either so sort of twisted by the system that they start to blame whoever they're told to blame, and they don't like foreigners and stuff, or they kind of go, well, I did all right, so everyone else will do all right. And it's kind of trying to convince people not to go down either of those routes and be like, no, the reason that people didn't succeed is the system's gamed against you.
I felt really sad the other day because I saw a video from a girl who, she's quite young and she's black and she lives in the outskirts of London. And she was basically like, well, you know, I managed to make a success of myself. And she was like that, you know, like, I've done it. And she said this thing that really irked me, and I almost stitched her and had a go at her. But she said, everyone's brain is the same. And I was like, that's absolute fucking shite. But I realized it was a bit like, you know, I watched the video and then I was like, right, calm down. She's going to learn one way or another.
Yeah.
But everyone's brain isn't the same, because like everyone's like, it's in a body that gets treated differently. Like you had to skip breakfast because you were starving, so you can't concentrate, and you have ADHD and your life is really hard, so you got depression. Or like when I was making the response video before I deleted it, I was like, my mum, when I was 11, cancer was what killed her in the end, but she had cancer when I was 11. And I didn't give a fuck what was going on at school while she was going through that, because I'd just watched my granddad go through. My granddad had just gone through it and survived. And then barely 3 months later, my mum was like, oh, by the way, like, so you can't do that. Like, everyone's equal, because we're not.
It's also a very, like, a lot of the time it's quite a middle class point of view of like, well, you know, everyone's fine. Everyone's born in this. Everyone starts at the same point in the race. And it's like, it's just not, categorically not true. And there was that famous video that was done of I can't remember, there's this American woman who's, she's a very tiny older lady, gray hair. She always does these videos of like treating white people how black people are treated, and then they turn out to hate it. Yeah, you know who I mean. She did a video or an experiment where she said, okay, line up in a line and start racing, but if your parents are still married, you could take one step forward. And then she did all these series of questions and then said, right, start the race. And obviously a series of kids were already basically at the finish line, which has given them all the advantages. She said, that's how life works. And it's that thing of like understanding that not everyone has the same start in life, and understanding that, you know, just because one person did okay, another one didn't, and it's not their fault that happened. It's like looking at addiction or looking at gambling or alcoholism. There's so many reasons why these things happen, and it's not the individual's fault 9 times out of 10.
I think even if it is their fault though as well, it's like I have to catch myself, because I think I still have a lot of work to do, and it's why like I always take the compliments I get, because I'm sure you get them as well. You get people being like, oh my god, so nice and lovely. And sometimes I'll walk around, and like where I live, I have to walk under a bridge to get to where I live. And under this bridge, there's always people at like 10 o'clock in the morning opening the Scrumpy Jack.
Sure.
And I walk past them and my visceral gut reaction is like, and I feel awful, because I'm like, what the fuck do you know about what they're going through? How do you know that their house didn't burn down, that they haven't had the most miserable life in existence, that they got fired from their last job? And And I should know that from stuff that I've seen in my life, but it's a big part of who we are as people, and what we do in particular online is picking those things apart for other people so it's easier for them to do. And that's why, even though sometimes I catch myself and I'm like, fucking hell, 61,000 people listen to me talk about this shit. Yeah. I'm like, this can never get to your head, because the second you stop relating to the people that you're talking to, it's fucking pointless, and you might as well delete your account.
Exactly. And I had the same thing. I had an experience where I was rushing out of work and I was hiring a bike because I live in London. And I was like, I'm going to cycle home because I've got to get home and do this thing. And a guy came up to me like, oh, sorry, mate, you're like, have you got a pound on it? And I didn't have any cash on me, because annoyingly now in the world, I just don't have cash. And I was just, I didn't like shoo him off. I was like, oh, sorry, mate, I don't have any money, I got to go. And then he stopped and he said, you look like you've got all the money in the world. You can't even speak to me for a minute. And he walked away. And I was like, this is the first time I've ever had an experience like that, where I was trying to get away from the guy. And what he said to me, I was like, that turned me on a dime, because I was like, oh shit, I didn't want to be the person that does that. But I was so obsessed with like work, getting home, my life. I was like, shit, fucking hell. Like, you preach all this stuff, why don't you walk the walk as well as talking the talk? And I was like, I made sure from that, like that point, I was like, okay, I need to never let that ever happen again. It was the only time that I really tried to get away as quick as I could, because I always want to give them the conversation. Cause I'm like, if I can't give you money or food right now, I'm sure you could at least do with a conversation, because it's a lonely thing being homeless. And it really caught me off guard. And I agree, like, as soon as you let stuff like that, or even your limited success as an individual get to your head, then you forget the whole reason why you care about this stuff.
Exactly. So I guess the last thing I want to ask, because I'm always curious about this, and it's something, bearing in mind you don't have to have any like amazing answers or fixed answers, because I'm struggling with this, but like, what would your ideal longer term changes for politics be? Because I'm struggling to answer this myself, but I'm curious about whether you've already thought about it.
I guess there's probably a few I'd like to see. I think I'd like to see a key thing for me is like representation within parliament of working class people being involved, and having people that, you know, a transport minister who actually understands transport, rather than being a boy that went to Eton, studied economics and somehow knows about transport now. You know, I'd like my dad worked in transport, the lorry driver for years. Someone like him who understands the intricacies of what this industry is should be leading that role. And a working class, more working class people in there, like your Jess Phillips and stuff, is exactly what needs to happen, because I'm sick of the Etonian scum fuckers getting in charge, basically, because they are the reason we're in this fucking shithole, is because those cunts because of them. And that's the first thing I'd like to see, is more working class representation. The second one, I'm very weirdly, I've always thought it was giving 16-year-olds the vote, sort of lowering the voting age and saying, you know, if you're a kid, because I remember being 16 and being very, very political and aware, and I knew what I wanted to vote for. And things like Brexit, they should have been given the vote on, and we should have capped it at about 70. Because I'm like, what are you voting for, 70-year-old? You're not going to see it. And whereas a 16-year-old has to live in it. So that's another thing, is giving the young people the vote. So working class people, young people. And I guess, yeah, going the Portuguese route of sort of decriminalizing drugs and legalizing them. And, you know, legalizing weed and selling it like we sell cigarettes, because the economy sure could do with the booze right now. And sort of treating prostitutes better. And that kind of world. And the last thing, I guess, would be just a kinder policy towards trans people and making misogyny a crime and those kinds of things. Like the book I read that put me on that route was Men Who Hate Women, which is a fantastic book, which I recommend if anyone who's listening hasn't read it. But it's a great book that goes through why you have these incels and these right-wing communities that hate women. And it educated me a lot to go like, I'd never seen that perspective of it. And it talks about sort of, you know, how trans women are treated and all this stuff. And I'd like to see a world in politics where we take misogyny and we take transphobia as a more serious crime than what it's taken as right now. So those, I guess, are the four routes I'd like to see progressed in politics.
Awesome. If you do want to learn more about like incels and stuff like that, remind me to put you on to my friend Maria, because like she's cool. Done so much work on it and she's like a genius. Plus her podcast, Enemies of the People, she's done a few episodes about that in particular, which are like, honestly, I'm such a geek for it. I can't wait for it to come back. It's so good.
It's a really interesting subject to get into, especially when you look at how these fringe Reddit fucking losers have basically made Trump get into power. Like that kind of like weird where they affect the real world. It's very, very crazy when you look into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This was super cool and I'm really glad that we did it. Yeah.
Well, everyone love to do another.
Absolutely. We'll get you on again before long. But yes, I'll put all your details in the episode.
Wonderful. Thank
but
you.
Yes. Thanks as always for joining us here on Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. If you do want to follow me on social media so we can chat about the episodes and future upcoming information, you can follow me on Twitter, either at Political Ragers or Davy Moo. You can follow me on Instagram at Politically Enraged or Davy Moo. And you can follow me on TikTok at Davy Moo. If you do want to sponsor the show on Ko-fi, you can just search Politically Enraged on Ko-fi. Join me again soon for another episode of Politically Enraged. And remember, get politically engaged and stay politically enraged.